Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 23, Maharaj Prithu's Going Back Home, Text 29. Maitreya Uvacha Stuvatishu Amara Strishu Pati Loka Gata Vaduhu Yam Va Atma Vidam Duryo Vainyaha Prapachyutashrayaha Maitreya Vacha Stuvatishvamara Strishu Patilokam Gatavaduhu Yamva Atma Vidam Duryo Vainya Prapachyutashrayaha Maitreya Vacha Stuvatish Amara Strishu Patilokam Gata Vaduhu Yamvatma Vidam Duryo Vainya Prapachyutashrayaha Maitreya Vacha Stuvatishvamara Strishu Patilokam Gatavaduhu Yamvatma Vidam Duryo Vainya Prapachyutashrayaha Maitreya Vacha Stuti Shamara Srishu Pati Lokam Gatavaduhu Vama Vidam Vuyo Kainya Kukutrasha Prilacha Vedrisha Mala Srishu Yaya Vidavaru Ramavidam Duryo Yapapachitasaya Maitreya Vacha Duvati Shamara Srishu Maitreya Vacha Vati Shavati Su Shishu Yavakam Vidavidu Yavakam Vidavidu Vachasa Vaishnavis Vayavacha Stuvati Shamara Shishu Kilo kam gita vidu Devati samarastishu Hikakam gajavadahu Vatam gajavido Maitreya vacha Devati samarastishu Padilo kam kitabadu. Ramadam udo. Kapitiasaya. Maitreya Vacha. The great sage Maitreya continued to speak. Stuvatishu. While glorifying Amarashtrishu by the wives of the denizens of heaven, Patiloka, the planet where the husband had gone, Gata, reaching Vaduhu, the wife, Yam, where Va, or Atmavidam, of the self-realized souls. Duryaha, the topmost. Vainyaha, the son of King Vena. Prithu Maharaj. Prapa, obtained. Achyuta Ashrayaha, under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Please repeat. The great sage Maitreya continued, speaking, my dear Vidura, when the wives of the denizens of heaven were thus talking amongst themselves, Queen Archie reached the planet, which her husband, Maharaj Prithu, the topmost self-realized soul, had attained. Purport. According to Vedic scriptures, a woman who dies with her husband or enters into the fire in which her husband is burning, also enters the same planet her husband attains. In this material world, there is a planet known as Patiloka, just as there is a planet known as Pitraloka. But in this verse, the word Patiloka does not refer to any planet within this material universe, for Prithu Maharaj, being topmost among self-realized souls, certainly returned home back to Godhead and attained one of the Vaikuntha planets. Queen Archie also entered Patiloka, but this planet is not in the material universe, for she actually entered the planet which her husband attained. In the material world also, when a woman dies with her husband, she again unites with him in the next birth. Similarly, Maharaj Prithu and Queen Archie united in the Vaikuntha planets. In the Vaikuntha planets, there are husbands and wives, but there is no question of their giving birth to children or having sex life. In the Vaikuntha planets, both husbands and wives are extraordinarily beautiful, and they are attracted to one another, but they do not enjoy sex life. Indeed, they consider sex not to be very relishable, because both husband and wife are always absorbed in Krishna consciousness and in glorifying and chanting the glories of the Lord. According to Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, a husband and wife can turn the home into a place as good as Vaikuntha, even while in this material world. Being absorbed in Krishna consciousness, even in this world, husband and wife can live in Vaikuntha simply by installing the deity of the Lord within their home and serving the deity according to the directions of the Shastras. In this way, they will never feel the sex urge. That is the test of advancement in devotional service. One who is advanced in devotional service is never attracted by sex life. And as soon as one becomes detached from sex life and proportionately attached to the service of the Lord, he actually experiences living in the Vaikuntha planets. And the ultimate issue, there is actually no material world. But when one forgets the service of the Lord and engages himself in the service of his senses, he is said to be living in the material world. Om Vijnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the message here is that there actually is possibility for true love in Krishna consciousness in between husband and wife, male and female. So, of course, here, you know, we're being presented with the ideal, and as in so many matters, the ideal in Krishna consciousness is not always so easy to attain, but still the principle is given here that yes, if somebody's searching for their soulmate, their eternal soulmate, well, that is in a sense possible. The example is given here. Yes, they were serving Krishna in this world, and then they were again united in the spiritual world, you know, to serve Krishna. And it's even mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in the purport that sometimes, you know, when the husband and wife are very close to each other, they take birth again and meet each other again, even in the material world. Now you can look at that as a blessing or a curse, depending on how you're taking it. But still, the example is given here that there is a possibility for, you know, Krishna conscious husband and wife to serve Krishna together in this world and the next. And there are so many examples of, you know, Krishna conscious householders that are, you know, very exemplary. You know, it's possible for husband and wife to serve Krishna together, you know, have children and live out their entire life in a Krishna conscious way and then go back home, back to Godhead, and, you know, perhaps also continue to serve Krishna there. You know, I was, you know, reflecting during the Rath Yatra here, you know, when there were, you know, so many second generation devotees that, you know, it must be, you know, a nice feeling for the parents, you know, if they can see, well, yes, well, there's my son or daughter who has also become a nice devotee of Krishna and is dancing, chanting, you know, before Lord Jagannath and engaged in devotional service, you know, helping set up and break down, you know, the Rath Yatra. Well, that must be very, you know, satisfying for, you know, a parent to see that. Of course, as I said, this, you know, that's the ideal in often cases, as in so many other aspects of Krishna consciousness, we find the ideal is difficult to attain, but still it's there. And even if we find it difficult to attain the ideal, still if we keep the ideal in mind and meditate on the ideal examples of the pure devotees, you know, the great devotees, then still we get some, you know, benefit. Of course, there's always, you know, the other side of the coin as well, that, you know, the Vedic literatures, you know, they also glorify renunciation and, you know, detachment, you know, in terms of accepting, you know, brahmacharya and sannyas and that sort of thing as well. But here, you know, the example is being given of, you know, the perfection of grihastha life or householder life in Krishna consciousness. And actually the two things, the renounced life and the householder life, are really not so completely different in Krishna consciousness, in ideal Krishna consciousness, we could say. Because even the householders, they're supposed to be grihastha brahmacharis. Everyone's a brahmachari in ideal Krishna consciousness. You know, there's brahmachari brahmacharis, grihastha brahmacharis, vanaprastha brahmacharis, sannyas, you know, brahmacharis. Because they're all supposed to be living in a renounced mood, you know, just accepting enough, you know, sense gratification, you know, to keep the body and soul together and focusing on their service to Krishna. What's this whole male-female thing in the material world is a bit of a mystery from the scientific point of view. Because according to the scientific point of view, there is no Vaikuntha, there is no spiritual world, there's only the material world, and, you know, the material world is what it says. It's made of matter in the form of chemicals, and they believe that on Earth, life self-organized from chemicals, and the first living things, according to the modern atheistic materialistic scientific point of view, the first living things were just some tiny one-celled creatures that reproduced asexually. In other words, there was no male and female. There were just asexual one-celled amoebas and things like that that just split. That's how they reproduce, just by splitting. So it's a bit of a mystery from the scientific point of view how you get male and female. Nobody's really explained it yet, how that came about, although it's such a fundamental part of our reality. But according to the Vedic point of view, you know, we understand that this male and female has always been there. It's an eternal part of reality. There's Radha, Krishna, eternally. And that what we experience in this world as male and female, that's a reflection of that eternal reality. And how we solve, you know, that particular problem, you know, is a big part of our progress in Krishna consciousness. You know, how we deal, you know, with the reality that we find ourselves in, male and female bodies. Of course, on the theoretical level, on a very advanced spiritual level, one understands I'm not this body. That's supposedly the very first lesson in Krishna consciousness, Dehinosmi Nyata Dehe, that we are not the body, but the soul within the body. Of course, although it's supposedly the first lesson in Krishna consciousness, sometimes takes us a long time to learn that first lesson. In one sense, this business of male and female, it's all external. And the dealings between, you know, male and female, they're kind of external in a sense. Like if you go to like an amusement park, sometimes they have these rides, you know, bumper cars. You know, you're driving in some bumper car and you hit some other person driving in the bumper car, and it's like fun. But really, you're not contacting the other person at all. It's just that your vehicle, your little bumper car, is, you know, bumping. So in the same way, you know, you could say, oh, somebody could say, oh, I touched my wife. But really, you don't. As a spirit soul, you're not touching anything. It's your material senses. The senses of your material body are contacting the senses of another body, which is just made of matter. So you could say, spiritually, you're not touching anything, really. Just like in the bumper car. I mean, you're not touching the other person in the car. It's just your car is bumping into the car of the other person. Of course, in this material world, the illusion of the body is much more convincing, you know, than, you know, the example of the bumper car. That's pretty easy to see. But Krishna makes our identification with the bodies that we have in this material world a little more stronger than we would identify with, you know, like getting into a car or, you know, getting into some ride in some amusement park. Maya is so powerful that, you know, the identification is more complete. And still, even though these are vehicles that we're in, still there's some rules for them. You know, like even though you're not your car, when you're driving on the street, you know, there still are traffic rules and things like that. So even though we aren't these bodies, there's still rules for using them. And in Vedic civilization, you know, there are certain rules for how souls and bodies, male and female bodies, should, you know, interact with each other. There's the Vivaha Yajna, the marriage yajna. And Krishna says, Dharma Virudo Kamosmi. I am sex life that's not contrary to religious principles. So that is allowed in Krishna consciousness. Krishna conscious householder life is allowed. There's some allowance for sex life there for the purpose of, you know, producing Krishna conscious children. As I said, if that indeed happens, if, you know, parents are able to produce Krishna conscious children, that's a very wonderful thing. It's a very marvelous thing. And if they can maintain their vows in householder life and help each other advance in Krishna consciousness, you know, for their entire lives, then it's also a very wonderful thing here. It's approaching the ideal, you know, that we see described in these verses. And And according to this purport, for such, a couple, there's, the chance they may continue to serve Krishna in the spiritual world. So in the story of Maharaj Prithu and Queen Archie, we see the real concept of soulmate. Of course, for these soulmates, Krishna's always in the center. I mean, that's the difference between the material concept of soulmate and the true spiritual concept of soulmate. In the material concept, it's all selfishness, really. But the real, Krishna conscious soulmate, husband and wife, soulmates, husband and wife, Krishna is in the center of their lives. And in that way, they can actually transcend a lot of the difficulties, the austerities that are involved in householder life. Pumsa Sriya Mituni Bhava Metam Tayor Mitu Hridya Granta Mahu Atogriya Chetra Sutapta Vitayar Janasya Mahoyam Hammameti. When there is an attraction between the souls and the male and female bodies, a very strong attraction. As I said, that one reason for that is because it's a reflection of an eternal reality. So it's not just some evanescent kind of thing. It's a very powerful urge. And when one enters into a relationship like that, it becomes very strong, like a knot, tied in the heart. And when the knot is tied like that, it's very difficult to untie it. And when that knot is tied, then it leads to so many other things. Griha, one requires some place to stay. And one has to have some apartment or house. And according to one's karma or so many other factors, the griha could be, you can look in the world, how many different types of grihas there are. Somebody is living in a very palatial estate, somebody is living in a hut somewhere. But still, there has to be some griha. And then chetra, one requires some field, either some agricultural field to raise grains or some field of work to produce wealth, because householder life requires some wealth, some funds. Sutta, then there are children, which can be a blessing or a curse. Ideally, Krishna conscious children are a blessing. But still, they have to be taken care of. They have to be supported. It takes a big investment of time, emotional energy. Apta, then one has to deal with relatives. Especially when one becomes married, one has to deal with mother-in-law, father-in-law, sisters-in-law, brothers-in-law, nephews, nieces. And one becomes entangled in all kinds of social obligations. One has to remember so many birthdays, anniversaries, holidays. One becomes involved in different exchanges, having to host, sometimes visit other people's houses, sometimes having to host people in one's own house. It's a very entangling cycle of social obligations, reciprocal social obligations. Vitai. And then one also has to look at the bank balance constantly. See, is there enough money for everything? But for devotees, if they're properly Krishna conscious, they can deal with all these things in a Krishna conscious way, either by just being oblivious to them, in a sense, and tolerating and understanding, yes, this is just something I have to undergo, or in, you know, perhaps just if Krishna arranges everything in an ideal way, it can be very pleasant. It all becomes part of one's devotional service to Krishna. So, in this purport and verse, we're getting a nice picture of the ideal relationship, you know, between your husband and wife and Krishna consciousness. Of course, it's not the only way to be Krishna conscious. One can be Krishna conscious also as a brahmachari or sannyasi. But in this part of the Bhagavatam, we're learning about ideal householder life. So does anybody have any comments or questions? Yes.
Nice class, Prabhu. I had an experience one time. I was in the hospital recently, and I had my appendix out, and I was in a lot of pain. And one devotee had left me a book, Beyond Birth and Death, and I'd read it twice, and I was reading it again. When the nurse came in, and she said, "What are you reading?" And I said, "Oh, I'm reading this book that's telling me I'm not my body." And I was still kind of out of it from the whatever. And then I said, "This book is telling me I'm not my body, and I really need to read it right now." And she goes, "Yeah, but I bet you're sure feeling a lot of pain." And she walked out of the room. And I felt like I didn't have an adequate response to her. So what you were saying in the class was helpful, but still I feel inadequate to address that to somebody. If I'm not this body, why am I feeling pain?
So if we're not our bodies, then why are we feeling pain? As I said, it's the first lesson in Krishna consciousness, but it's actually a very difficult lesson to learn. I think we all struggle with that. We know theoretically, and we've heard, you know, thousands of times, you know, we're not this body, but still, you know, we find we have to deal with the body and its different pleasures and pains and things of that sort. The reason why it's, I mean, we know what the standard answers are. You know, like, I mean, one answer, you know, to this question is that it's because of our identification, you know, with the body, you know, that we feel, you know, some kind of pain and accept it as something that is acting upon the real self, which is the soul. Kind of the standard example that we give is like if your car is out there and somebody crashes into it, then you feel some pain, you know, psychologically. If it's not my car, if I don't identify with it, then I don't feel the pain that's involved with it because I don't identify with it. And so that's, you know, one way to look at it. But, you know, the problem is that Krishna has, in making these bodies, has made the illusion so convincing that it's very difficult to get out of the illusion. The only way that we can really get out of it is not mentally, but by the practice of devotional service. It's not something that you can just mentally think your way out of. And this may mean, you know, performing devotional service despite bodily inconvenience and pain. And when we do that, you know, when we're able to do that, you know, to go on with our prescribed duties to Krishna, you know, despite, you know, what we might be feeling, or when we're experiencing, you know, this pain of the body and continue to chant Hare Krishna and focus on Krishna somehow or other, despite the pain, then we get the positive realization how we are beyond that. And it's not that the pain is not real in a sense, because this is something that's, like I said, in a normal, like some kind, if you go to a movie or something, you see very real forms. But in the reality that we're in, you know, like the demigods, and, you know, they create a much more intense artificial reality because they're able to put into the artificial reality taste, smell, sensations of hot, cold, pleasure, pain, you know, that are, you know, affecting the material senses, and that we become aware of through our consciousness, which is then influenced by the modes of material nature. So it's a much more convincing kind of display that Krishna is able to create through his yoga maya and all his demigod agents who are just working to do that. So, but still, there's another level of consciousness which we arrive at only by the practice of devotional service. I mean, theoretically we can think about these things, but to realize that those sensations are external to the real sensations of the soul, that's something that can only be realized by the practice of devotional service. And sometimes we experience that when, you know, we carry out our devotional service, even though, you know, the body may be giving us different kinds of troubles, then sometimes there, you know, like during a kirtan or something like that, we feel this positive spiritual happiness that's coming from a different source. It's not coming from the senses of the body. It's coming from the soul itself. So this kind of pleasure and pain that's coming from the senses is different than the spiritual emotions that come directly from the soul. But that's something, although we, you know, may be able to appreciate theoretically, unless we actually engage in the process of devotional service and experience it, what it means to be sukham yat tat atindriyam. You know, Krishna describes it in the Bhagavad Gita, this pleasure that comes not from the senses, but, you know, from the soul. Then yes, it may be difficult for us, you know, to reply to something like that, because on a certain level, yes, we are experiencing the pain. Archita.
Kind of a practical question. We see from the description of the Vaikuntha relationships that there's no sex life, there are no offspring, but there is attraction, but the couple are getting their pleasure by serving the Lord together. So that is obviously a kind of, you know, companionship. But yet, on this side of the equation, it seems that that's frowned upon. In other words,
it seems that's what?
To marry just for companionship is frowned upon. For instance, Prabhupada quite often quote that verse, "Pucha hinam griya shunyam." If there is no offspring, then the household is zero, void. And you know, one is advised to get married if one wants offspring, and if you don't, then don't bother with it. But it seems that the ideal is just that kind of relationship. It's just companionship in service to the Lord. But on this side of the equation, it doesn't seem like that's recommended. Maybe you want to comment on that.
Well, I did comment on it in the class, in the sense that I mentioned Krishna says, dharma viruddha kamasmi bharatarshipa, that it may be the ideal thing to be, you know, just attracted, but in reality, based on our own position, you know, we may require more than that. And usually that is the case. So Krishna gives an out. He says, well, if you perform this activity in the way I say it should be performed, then it also becomes devotional service. And, I mean, ultimately, I mean, it all depends on what our actual level of Krishna consciousness is. I mean, we may think, you know, I'm on some certain detached level. And if you are, fine. Then you have a Vaikuntha relationship in this world. But if you're kind of like artificially, you know, renouncing and trying to be in that level in a relationship in this world when the husband and wife really aren't on that level, then it's going to cause them some problems in one way or another. So, yes. Right. Okay, this will be the last one.
Yeah, Queen Archie and her husband went back to the spiritual world exactly as female and male. But does that mean our spiritual bodies are necessarily going to have the same gender as our material bodies?
That's another complicating factor. Yes, our gender and ultimate reality may be different, the one that we have, or it may be the same. So it would appear in this case that their husband and wife in this world and husband and wife in the spiritual world as well. But it's not, and of course also it says here, it says if they die together and they're very attached to one another on a spiritual level, then that may be there. But I don't think it's necessarily true that every husband and wife are going to wind up together in the spiritual world. And then even if they do, it's not guaranteed that, that because one has a male body in this world, they're going to have a male body in the spiritual world, or vice versa. Depends on their kind of attraction to Krishna. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.